powerful way. I'm excited to get started. Why don't you grab a seat? Welcome to the Conway crew. So glad that you are with us this morning. Welcome to our online audience. Thank you for checking in. And listen, it is 8:30 on Time Change weekend, and you are here. So clearly, you're the most holy and spiritual bunch at The Rock. So thank you for being here. I didn't want to be here, but we have an 8:30, so here I am. I don't like the mornings that much. Let's go. Okay, question to start off. Have you ever said something and then immediately regretted it? Anyone? Are you with me? So, like, for guys, when you were first married, maybe, and you were still a rookie, and I hope you've learned, and your wife did something really special, maybe decorated the house for an event, prepared a meal, and you came in and said, "That's not how my mom did it." Right. I just want to encourage single guys, never, ever, ever say that. Because she will respond with something like this. "Did you want to move back in with your mom?" And I hope she taught you how to turn the couch into a bed, because that's where you're sleeping tonight. Have you ever asked a question and then, like, immediately regretted it? Again, guys, here's one that you should avoid. That's this question. When is that baby due? Baby. Like, what baby? Like the rule of thumb is, if you don't know, never assume. Man, just don't assume at all. Have you ever not asked a question? Not approached someone, not taken the opportunity, and then, like, wish that you had? You didn't tell her. You didn't ask him. You didn't apply for the thing, whatever. And now it's too late, all right? So we're in this series called Finding Jesus. And we kicked it off last week looking at some of life's biggest questions. And we saw a guy named Nicodemus who came to Jesus looking for answers to life and to meaning and to eternity. Okay, well, this week we're going to be in Mark chapter 5, if you like to follow along in your Bibles. Mark chapter 5, and it's filled with broken, hurting people who find their way to Jesus. Here's all we're going to do today. We're just going to look at these guys' stories that we see in Mark chapter 5, and I'm going to show you how awesome and accessible and approachable Jesus is. Because listen, throughout Scripture and the Gospels, most people who weren't religious leaders seemed really confident and really excited and really hopeful to get to Jesus. And I want that for you, and for some of you, I'm going to encourage that this morning. So here we go, Mark chapter 5. And listen, I don't know about you, if you've been in church for some time, if you read your Bible, but like there are certain stories that I read in the Bible, and I think I really wish they would have had like cell phones, smartphones back there with a little camera to capture that little episode and put it on YouTube or Instagram, because like it would for sure go viral, right? Like there would be memes, there would be GIFs. Today's story, it's one of those, right? I would have loved to have seen how this played out in real life, because Jesus is going to heal a demon-possessed man who lives in a graveyard and apparently doesn't wear pants. So that's the story. Like, I'm not making it up. It's in your Bible. It's crazy, I know, but it's also going to highlight just how awesome and how compassionate Jesus is. So we'll pick it up, Mark chapter 5, starting right in verse 1. Here's what we read. They, being Jesus and his disciples, they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. All right, so like, that's the greeting committee. Have you ever gone on a trip, got off of a plane, and someone was there to greet you or to pick you up, like holding up the sign with your name on it? Like, I hope it wasn't this guy, because here's who showed up for Jesus and his crew. Goes on in verse 3. The man lived in the tombs. Like, I'm not sure what your current living arrangements are. Probably not this bad. He lives in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. Okay, so here's the imagery, right? Jesus gets out of the boat. And listen, he's exhausted. And we know he's exhausted because he's been healing and serving and loving on people all day. As they take the boat across the lake, a severe storm comes up, and he's sound asleep through it, right? Like, he is just so tired. He gets out of the boat, right? And the first thing that he sees is this demon-possessed man running towards him. Right, and keep in mind, they probably land most likely in the middle of the night from when they would have taken off from the other shore, probably the early morning hours. So it's likely still dark outside. It's probably a fairly narrow and rocky shore that very quickly gives way to a graveyard, to tombs. The tombs are filled with dead people, except for one, this guy. Right, and we're going to learn later that the impure spirits, the evil spirits, refer to themselves as legion, which a legion was a unit in a Roman army, which could often have as many as 6,000 men in it. So this guy potentially has 6,000 impure spirits living inside of him, which seems a little crowded, does it not? Like, I feel like they ignored the maximum occupancy sign. But it would make sense, because we're told that this guy was bound hand and feet with chains of iron, and he just broke them, right? Snapped them like a twig. So, like, nobody can subdue him. Apparently, as we read the story, he's not worn clothing in a while. So just wide-eyed and crazy hair, just like I picture walking with like a twitch, right? Just never blinking. Like, you don't want to do a staring contest. This is this guy. And I would suggest to you, like, not that you should ever, ever get into a fight, but if you do get into a fight and the other guy shows up not wearing pants, like, you should just turn around and go home, right? Just, like, tap out and walk away, because nobody wins in that fight, so you know. This guy's living. I'll try to get back on track here. This guy's living in the tombs. We're told he cries out day and night, just moaning. He's taking rocks, sharp objects, and he cuts himself. So clearly, in a very painful, hurting, broken place in life. And now it's the middle of the night, and he is running from the tombs at full speed towards Jesus and the disciples. Like, and here's how I imagine it. You won't find this in the text, but I imagine, like, Peter's probably the first one out of the boat, because Peter always has to be first, man. So probably out of the boat, dragging it ashore, telling the other guys, come on, let's go. And all of a sudden, he looks up, and crazy demon guy is charging towards him, just screaming like a banshee. Like, you have to see this, right? Like, I imagine Peter, like, scrambling to get back into the boat and hide behind Jesus. Because, like, this guy's coming fast, right? 20 yards from the boat, man. He's 15 yards. He's 10 yards, and he's not slowing down. He gets 5 feet from the boat, and all of a sudden, something crazy slides down onto his knees, right? Comes to a screeching halt right at the foot of Jesus. And here's what we read then. Pick it up in verse 7. He, right, the guy that's possessed, he shouted at the top of his voice, what do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Because first, listen, whatever obstacle or addiction or problem or challenge or issue you're facing, it loses power in the presence of Jesus. And this is, I think, again, such a powerful / beautiful story. Because you have to imagine, like, this guy is probably legendary back in town. Like the kids know, do not go out to the graveyard, right? Stay away from the tombs. Crazy, naked demon guy is running around out there. Like, people have completely given up on him, right? Like, there's no hope for this guy. They tried to shackle him, and he broke the shackles. So now they just leave him alone. Just let him run wild and ignore and avoid him, out of sight, out of mind. And then Jesus shows up, and he doesn't avoid him, right? Doesn't tell the disciples, oop, we hit the wrong port, back it up and try somewhere else. He talks to him, and he engages, and he heals him. And, like, if you know the story, right, Jesus will cast the impure spirits out of the man into a herd of pigs who run down the hill, the bank, into the water and drown, which creates all kinds of buzz back in town, right? Like it's trending on social. People are curious. They want to come out to check out and see what's going on. And then this is what we read in the end of verse 14. It says, the people went out to see what happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there dressed. I told you, it's different. And in his right mind. So like, you know, took a shower, combed his hair, shaved, brushed his teeth, put on pants, got a pen and a journal. It's like he's sitting at Jesus' feet taking notes. And it freaks the people out quite a bit because they're like, what kind of power can heal this guy? And here's what I want you to see, right? Here's what I want you to hear, that no one is beyond the grace of God. No one, right? This is why, listen, here at The Rock, we don't lose hope and we don't give up on anyone because this is what Jesus does. Jesus changes people and he offers hope to those who have no hope, right? Like how unbelievable is the outpouring of love and just affection and kindness and goodness of Jesus towards people? Because again, he doesn't avoid, he doesn't ignore the guy because he's messy. Or because he's scary, like everyone else in town has. He talks to the guy. He doesn't avoid you and I. He doesn't judge you and I because we're messy, because you're struggling, because you blew it, or because you're still blowing it. Like he leans in and he offers better hope, better healing, better freedom, better future, better life to the full. Okay, so then how do you and I get to the point? How do we come to the place where we would have confidence like that to come to Jesus, to ask him, like, into your life, to help meet your need, to help you walk through the trial, to help change the stuff that really, really needs maybe changed right now in your life? Well, two things, if you're taking notes. I want to give you two suggestions of how we get to that spot. First thing is this, you have to trust that Jesus is for you, right? Just really simple. You have to absolutely believe that Jesus is for you. And when you do, it starts making him much more easily accessible, right? Paul would write this in Romans 8:31. He asks this question, if God is for us, then who can be against us? Right? If God's with us, who can be against us? Okay, and the obvious answer to that question would be, lots of things can still be against you, right? Like in the real world, like I know you become a Christian, you're like, this thing still feels like it's against me. But the implication here is those things begin to lose impact in our lives because God has adopted you as his own, made you an heir to an eternal kingdom and inheritance, right? And now given you right standing. Because Jesus died on the cross, and now he stands at the right hand of God, championing you and cheering for you and advocating on your behalf. And like no one can shut that down. He's going, let's help him, God. Let's go take care of her. How about we crush that thing that is harming or lying or damaging them, right? Even people that are broken and messy with the past, that are tormented and living in a graveyard, are not too far gone or too hopeless for Jesus to get to and fight for. And listen, whenever you trust, believe that Jesus is completely for you, then I'm telling you, it will make you much more confident to approach him, to share whatever is on your heart. And think about this, right? Here's the analogy I want you to think. Think about the relationship between a child and their parent. Right, especially little kids, right, in a healthy dynamic. This is part of why I think that Jesus encouraged you should have faith like a child. Right, think about this. And we read this in Galatians 4, verse 7. Paul tells us, so you are no longer a slave, but God's child. And since you are his child, God has made you also an heir. Because listen, I don't know about your kids. My kids will ask me for anything, right? Like they don't schedule an appointment. They don't call me pastor, right? Like, Pastor, do you have some time? We can meet next week. They don't tell me how awesome I am. They're like, you did a great job there, Dad. Like, none. They should work on that a little bit more. But they just bust in, man. They just walk in the room, walk in the office, walk in whatever, and tell me what they need. And I love it, right? I love helping out my kids. I always want to. Have you ever watched outtakes of interviews done by a celebrity or an entertainer or athlete when it's done in their home and they have small children? So the lights are on and the camera's rolling and the interview's going on, and then the three-year-old just comes walking right in, climbs up in mommy's lap, right, or starts playing with dad. They're like, I don't care about your cameras or your interview. I want mom, right? I need some dad time. And in they come. We read this in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15. The writer there tells us, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weakness, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Then watch verse 16. So let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. And I thought about that because I feel like sometimes we're tempted to do just the opposite, to get nervous, to not have confidence, to not assume that God wants the best for us. And I was thinking about this just the other day. So we have two dogs at our house. We have an Australian Shepherd named Indy, right? He's the cool dog. And then we have a little Maltese Yorkie mix called Coco, because she's like a little cup of cocoa. She's tiny. Total diva. Okay, and so my wife used to tell me, she used to say, hey, the dogs are potty trained and they don't use the bathroom in the house. And so listen, I grew up with a dad who owned a carpet business. And so often in high school and college, I would go and lay carpet with him. And I've pulled up enough carpet at people's homes who insisted that their dogs were potty trained to have evidence to show you to the contrary, right? Like, no. So I would tell my wife, I'm like, listen, okay, they're potty trained until they're not, because they're dogs, right? It's not like when nature calls, you're going, oh, come on, guys, we got to hold it. They just got a new rug. We can't do that. So actually, we end up just getting wood floors at our house to help alleviate some of that tension. And probably like your dogs, so much like yours, whenever we come home, the dogs get excited, and they start barking, and they come running to the door of the garage and wagging their tails, and they want to know what's going on, and just like the furry greeting committee. Okay, so the other night, we come home from wherever we're at, and I walk into the house and into the kitchen, and there's a puddle right by the kitchen table. And so I look at my wife and say, I told you so, right? No, I absolutely did not, because I've been married for a while, and I know better. So now I play it off, right? I'm like, look at that wet spot by the kitchen table. I wonder what that is. And my wife's like, shut up. I know what you're doing. And so we come in the house, and we see there's a puddle there by the kitchen table. So I walk in. I'm like, oh, dogs. And I go to clean it up. But here's what I notice as I do that. So Indy, the Australian Shepherd, like he's still wagging his tail, and he's still sniffing to see what's going on. He's running around like, happy dog, happy dog. Well, Coco, I notice she tucks her tail between her legs and goes slinking around the corner to go and hide. And I realize, I'm like, she made the mess, man. And she knows she did it. And so she's going to hide because she's just assuming she's in trouble. All right? Okay, this is oftentimes, I think, what we tend to do in our relationship with God. We think because, I made a mess. I've got a past. I slipped up. I had a bad day. I lost my temper. I said the thing. I didn't forgive like I should have. God's probably upset with me and not for me. And we forget that we never made a way to God, right? Like, he did that, and it's always open. And think about this. Think, if you believe that, your boss is not for you, right? Oh, I think he wants to get rid of me or replace me. If you think the coworker is not for you, if they're gunning for my job or they're saying bad things, if you think your spouse isn't for you or a parent or a coach or a professor, then you begin to pull back, right? You begin to shrink back. You begin to internalize and go in and not approach with confidence. So I did young adult ministry for a season in the other SC, Southern California. And after being there for about a year, we had this young guy named Robbie that started coming. Some friends from college had invited him to the young adult ministry. And after being there for several months, and we had fun conversation, he was a guy that did not know God previous to coming to those gatherings. After a while, after several months, he decided he was in. Like, he was just going to trust Jesus, take the deal, and follow him. And we had some really great chats, some really good conversation. Like, and he was just so excited to just get plugged in and to serve and to become part of the community. And just really honest, man, which I loved. Transparent about his background. Like, he had struggled with a drug problem, an addiction, at a young age. And, like, he's like, and I'm done with that. And I'm ready to change my life and start down a new path. And so we prayed, and I'm like, man, Robbie, that's awesome, right? That's so cool. And I'm excited to see what God's doing in you and the way he's working on your heart and working in your life. And we're going to get you plugged in, man. Pray, get you connected. But I need you to promise me, because I've been doing ministry for long enough, so I, like, know the roller coaster that is real life. You guys know this? And so I'm like, listen, you got to promise me that if you have that moment, right, where you do backslide or you slip up or you blow it, because that could happen, right? It could. Okay, listen, don't run from Jesus. Run to him in that moment because he's still for you, even then, especially then. He's for you. So you have to trust, first and foremost, that Jesus is just for you. He absolutely is. Then that will bring us to the second thing, if you're taking notes, when we talk about how to ask and trust he's for you. And I would say this, come to Jesus in any way and every way, right? Don't worry, am I getting it right? Do I need to have the right language? Do I need to fix this? Can I? Listen, any way and every way, just get there. So back in Mark chapter 5, okay, the story goes on. After Jesus has this encounter with the demon-possessed guy, then they get in the boat and go back across the lake, where he then has two more encounters. He has an encounter with a father whose little girl is dying, and then with a woman who has dealt with a chronic illness, physical ailment, for years. Here's what we read then, back in chapter 5 of Mark, verse 22. We're told this, then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came. And when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, my little daughter is dying. Please, right? Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. Man, I want you to feel that. Parents, man, feel that. Anybody in the room that is right now caring for someone that's going through a hard season or maybe sick that you love deeply? So here we've got a dad who for sure, right, who no doubt has done everything within his power, like everything he can to try to help his daughter, like his little girl, be healed. And listen, she's still dying. He has no more options. He has no more tricks up his sleeve, right? He has no more time. We'll see. It's all over. It's gone. And so he comes to Jesus, like, just desperate and begging, and just throws himself at the feet of Jesus. And Jesus basically says, all right, let's go. Let's do this. But then on their way, right, before they can even make it to the guy's house there in town, he has another encounter with the woman who's been subject to bleeding for 12 years. Years, right? Like not 12 days, not even weeks, not months, years she's dealt with this. Here's what we read then about this woman in chapter 5, verse 26. We're told she had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all that she had, all of it. Yet, instead of getting better, she grew worse. Which, how many of you right now, maybe you can identify with this story. You had something unexpected or painful or difficult that came just crashing right into your life. And you've done everything that you could possibly think of, right? You spent the money. You sought counsel. You sought doctors. You moved. You rearranged. You tried whatever you possibly could. And it's just getting worse, right? For this woman, 12 years, and she has spent all of her money, maybe borrowed money, maybe ran up credit card debt, trying to find any and every treatment available, and she's worse off than when she started. Anyone walking through that right now? You're just tired. Maybe you're just discouraged. I sat with a group just recently, and there's a really sweet, faithful woman in there that is dealing with some very recent news that she's now got chronic illness that, you know, she will probably be battling for a long time, permanently, maybe, short of a miracle. So for this woman, 12 years, listen, nothing at all has changed. She's tried everything. It's only getting worse. She's without hope, and she's without help. And then finally, she finds her way to Jesus. And listen, she won't even address him, right? She doesn't even have the nerve at this point to do that. She just wants to touch him. And she does, the hem of his robe, which you have to get the picture there. If she's touching the hem, she's like on her face in the dirt, just reaching out to Jesus simply to touch him, man. And she gets healed. And Jesus recognizes her and says, daughter, which I think is interesting because maybe he's letting Jairus know, I care about daughters. Daughter, he says, your faith has healed you. And then a couple of verses later, Jairus finds out his little girl has died and he's done, giving up hope. And Jesus says, listen, don't be afraid, just believe. And he goes and he heals his little girl. And I just want you to hear that when you're desperate, when the thing has gone further than you ever thought it would go, or it's hurting more than you thought it could hurt, when you've exhausted all options, Jesus will be right there waiting, ready to help, ready to heal, ready to give hope, ready maybe just to comfort. All you have to do is ask, right? Just come to Jesus. You're like even just to touch his robe. Absolutely, you should. But what if my thing is too late, too far gone? Like the little girl? Okay, never. Do you know why? Do you know why that this woman suffered for so long and she went through so much before she came to Jesus? Anyone? Because I don't. Like, I didn't learn this in Bible college. They don't have an answer for that. I don't know why my dad spent the majority of his life not being a believer and then finally comes to Christ, has this really great transformation, and then with what we thought with quite a bit of quality life left, he gets brain cancer and a brain tumor and doesn't get healing in this life. Like, I don't know why. I do know that I'm really glad, even late in the game, that he did come to Jesus. Right? And I just want to encourage and beg and plead with some of you in the room. Come to Jesus in any way and in every way, however, wherever, whenever, doesn't matter. Like, get there. It says you will seek him and you will find him when you seek him with all your heart. Just ask, seek, knock. He's just ready to open that door. And I really want for someone in the room, please hear this as we close out. You are not too much for Jesus. You are not too broken for Jesus. You are not too hopeless for Jesus. You're not too far gone. You're not too messy. You're not too dirty. You're not too whatever for Jesus, right? He wants to lean into your thing. He wants to be involved in your thing. And listen, he had ultimate victory on the cross so that he could meet your greatest, your deepest, your most desperate need, and I invite you to him. So here's what we'll do. Listen, if you have never crossed that line of faith and invited Jesus into your life, we would love for you to get to make that decision right now. All you have to do is ask, and he is ready. We have volunteers that'll be in the back, out in our lobby. We would love to help you walk through that first-time faith decision. If you would like to get baptized because you've never made that public proclamation, we'll be doing that at the end of this series on Easter. It would be an awesome opportunity for you to say, Jesus, I really want to ask you in and make this declaration for all to see. Maybe you're just in a hard season and you're really struggling with the trial and you're trying to carry it, you're trying to push through, you're trying to be strong, and you are exhausted. And you just ask him, Jesus, I need your help. And I don't know how he might comfort you, right? I'm not sure what he will offer. We do know that Isaiah makes it clear that Jesus was a man of suffering, familiar with sorrow. He understands what you're walking through. Maybe you need to ask on behalf of someone else, right? Maybe you just need to pray for someone that you know, man, they're resisting or they don't believe, but what they really need is Jesus, and I'm going to start just praying for them. God has put them on your heart. And you just start asking Jesus, man, just start planting seeds, just start nudging God, do a work on them. We are coming up on Easter. And we think, like, throughout this series, we think every single week is a great week to just invite someone, ask them to come with you. Let us be part of that journey. And as we get ready for Easter, who is it that is close to you, but is far from God, that he has just put you in a unique relationship with that maybe then you could ask? And maybe they would receive that and they would start a whole new journey. So many opportunities. I just don't want you to meet them. I want you to let God work on your heart where he needs. So let's do this. Why don't you stand? We're going to sing. If you would like to take communion, we've got those on the stations up front. You can come spend some time with God. If you would like prayer, we have prayer partners on your front left to your back right. We would love to pray with you. So glad you're here. Let me pray and we're going to sing. God, we thank you that you do love us as you find us. That your love is radical and relentless and faithful and good. May we trust it and come to